But so, well, it's one of these questions that you answer by telling people what you think is important as opposed to what's important. So let me just mention two of them. One is, I'm actually very interested in how systems can learn through language, through interacting by language with humans. So we have these really great techniques for what I would refer to as batch-oriented learning, where you have lots of data, the more the better. But actually, if you think about how humans learn from each other, well, humans learn also by observation, but they also learn from each other, and they can do it in very rapidly and very sophisticated ways. This conference is a good example of it. You get up, well, let's take it from the other perspective. You sit in the audience, and over the course of 15 minutes, you might learn some really new concepts that you haven't, well, you hope you could learn really new concepts that you haven't encountered before. How did that happen? So there's something really interesting when two people can talk to each other and sort of evolve an understanding of the topic. The other quick observation is that we talk about stuff like dialogue systems and conversational systems, but kind of from a higher perspective, it's almost like these things are a service that an intelligence uses to communicate with other intelligences. So the end all is not a conversational system. It's really a skill that a artificial agent can use to communicate in different ways. And I think we should always be trying to push the foundation or push the premises of what we're trying to do towards that. It's really about intelligent agents interacting, not just conversation.
So I agree with Alex on learning from users, learning from human interactions. I think even learning how to take actions from users, those are all interesting areas to go, because it's very easy to show somebody how to do something, but current machines cannot really learn.
You mean like imitation learning?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that's one area. I think getting to know the users, like integrating some personalities, that is also very important. It's really tiring to keep repeating the same things again and again to your personal agent. These are important areas. And finally, I do believe, especially what we do, like face-to-face conversations, there's a lot of information in the just even face-to-face conversation in the speech, in the context, in the general broad context. These are all important things. So conversations do not just happen just through text.
Multimodal interfaces is something you're interested in.
In general, yes.
Whoever wants to go, just go ahead.
Add a little bit. I think in many ways right now in dialogue system, at least the data-driven dialogue systems, which is the place where I mostly work, we're really in this age of like pattern recognition of dialogue systems, right? We do some pattern matching, which is really quite shallow, but really effective on very large data sets. And we're getting better at doing it, but it makes for very shallow conversations. And so if we want to have much richer conversations, we really need to figure out how to manipulate more complex information, reason about that complex information, interface the dialogue system with that level of complex reasoning. It's not something that's limited to dialogue systems. It's a big challenge for NLP systems in general. And I would say a lot of the systems that are being trained by deep learning right now, the pattern recognition phase, we have made huge progress with large data sets, large computation, but we need to think about how to reintegrate some of the symbolic manipulation within that framework.
I just follow what you just said, right? Currently, the data-driven dialogue system tried to learn the shape of the conversation, but it's a very shallow conversation. We have been working on knowledge-grounded conversation, meaning that the agent not only needs to talk like a human, but also the agent needs to be equipped with much richer knowledge than human beings. So that during the conversation, it's not just help you to kill your time. It will give you useful information, give you recommendations. So while working really hard to move from pure chit-chat like conversation to this recommendation style conversation. Another point I want to make is that because the agent needs to be equipped with knowledge, so it's important to not only learn the shape of the conversation, but also know how to organize the underlying knowledge. So ideally, the way you organize and store the knowledge should be facilitated to the conversation. So we are working on so-called end-to-end conversation engines. Another point I want to make is the sort of reinforcement learning. There's a growing interest in applying reinforcement learning to dialogue. Though we observed in the research community there are currently no common platform like Atari game where you can play with different reinforcement learning technologies. In dialogue, it's just impossible to have humans sitting in front of your system to talk to your system millions of times to learn the policy. So we try to build the simulated users to engage with the agent, but so I would say it's an early step. And I really want to know, get your ideas and suggestions how we move forward, okay, to get this standing right.
So you've all raised a couple of strands that are related. So Alex brought up the fact that, you know, humans learn very fast from single-shot examples, so one-shot learning, and you're bringing up, you know, how do we bring in like knowledge bases, and how do we learn with reinforcement learning but we don't have simulators? So what do you think, like, you know, what is the most demanding problem right now from this perspective? Like, what is it the reinforcement learning problem that's holding us back? Is it the amount of data we need? Do you think we just need better algorithms? Because our algorithms right now are often huge models that require millions of examples. Is that what's holding us back? You go ahead and.
So I think Darwin is like a chicken and egg problem. Until you put up some system, real system that people can trust on out there, you don't really get to see what the real user data looks like. That's one of the biggest challenges that we are having right now.
I would challenge that. So how about humans? Sorry to be so. But humans learn from their parents, from when they're little, right? And they don't also face a chicken and egg problem, because if you don't talk to them, how would they learn your language?
So. Exactly, but they observe. They observe many times without having that level of trust to the system. Like, are you going to really teach it? Does it really learn? Right?
Right, right. So if we had
if you can do it from a small number of examples, yes. But if you really need a lot of data to see all these variations to generalize from it, that is a big problem. So I think the real data is one of the biggest challenges. Like Jianfeng is talking about, we do build user simulators also. We do build even create characteristics of user simulators. But at the end of the day, still there is nothing like, unfortunately, real data. Because every time we push something out, we do see all these things that we didn't think of before.
So usually we need to find a starting point. I suggest we go where data is. From there, at least you have a lot of human-human conversation data from which you can build simulated users and accumulate the data you need to solve your task. So it's, in some sense, a transfer learning type of thing. Right? You start from where the data is available, then move to the domain or task you're interested in.
So one problem is doing this transfer learning very well from these other tasks where we have massive amounts of data and bringing it to your task. Yeah.
And this also depends on your motivation to build these computation systems. Right.
Yeah. Right. What do you do if there is no data out there? Like, how do you solve that problem?
But there is a lot of data. Right? I mean, there just is a lot of data for dialogue right now. We're looking at data that has to be curated in a certain way in public and so on. But, you know, I was just looking up a few stats earlier. There's already 100,000 bots that are deployed on Facebook Messenger, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of data, and that's a lot of exploration. There's 1.2 billion users, monthly users, right? That's a lot of data that is not necessarily all of it accessible to everyone. But that's but one platform, right? There's a ton of data being generated, and we just have to figure out a better way to harness it.
Yeah, really, I think the problem is not the lack of the data. We have tons of data. The problem is how to identify the right data set for the particular task you are interested in.
But how about the quality of the data?
Huh?
Go ahead.
I just pulled over the microphone. So data is nice, but again, I think we should try and take some hints from humans. There's this notion of proactive learning. You don't just sit there and gather data in the corner. You actually go around getting data, you test stuff, talk to people. There's a whole learning mechanism that's in our brains, hopefully still there, that makes this stuff work. The other observation is, for humans, it really does take a lot of data. It takes a long time. I mean, a human child has to get to about 5 or 6 before their speech is mastered. Talking, and just language takes another half dozen years, and then there's all that other stuff you have to learn. Now that is, many, 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 many hours of experience, and plus the fact that humans actually know how to exploit the data in interesting ways, useful ways. So that's a bit of an aside, but the real point I want to make is humans can take a decade to kind of sort of figure out some of the things that we're trying to do with a large data set. There's something going on there that we somehow should take into account in the approaches that we develop.
But can they really do that? So there are lots of psychology experiments with, for example, animals, where if an animal is just allowed to observe but never act in the environment, they never learn. Like once you've, like, let's say there's a...
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's part of being a human kid. You poke at stuff.
Right. So if I just gave a human kid a million dialogues from different, Facebook chatbots and put it in a box and say, this is everything you'll ever see, and then in 10 years, we're going to release you to the real world, do you think that would work? This is a bit what Joelle was hinting at. We could use this data and that would bring us very far.
I think you learn from both. I really do think you do. As humans, I think we learn from both. This will sound crazy, but I have a friend who claims she learned how to snowboard simply by watching videos. She lived in Africa when she was a teenager, and she was obsessed with these videos of snowboarders and watched them endlessly. And then she got on a board and learned much, much, much more quickly than if she had not visualized these videos. Which is not to say, that's the best way to learn, but we do learn a lot simply by observation. But then we also learn a lot by, poking the bear and figuring out what's the reaction that we're going to get. And so this is where, deploying lots of bots in all sorts of settings, we're going to get very interesting information. It allows us to control the distribution of the data that we see. That's really what having actions gives us. If we're passive, we don't get to control that distribution. I think there's a tremendous opportunity to learn from both.
So one other related aspect that comes up here is the expectations that users have when they talk to your bot. So for example, in your experiments, Alex, you were showing before that humans were annotating the bot's response. Where do people, the annotators, where they're aware that this is a bot they're talking to? And how does that affect their interactions with it? Because that is a huge bias on its own, right? And how do you deal with that?
I don't think we. I'll have to go back and check, but I don't think we made a big deal of the fact that this was a robot. It was just a conversation. But I think that's. I think that in itself is actually a really important point. We all bring expectations to these things that filter our understanding and our interactions.
Anything to add?
I would say sometimes, humans learn faster than bots when you put them together. The humans learn to talk in a certain way that they're going to get what they want out of the bot. In a sense, you want to push both of them outside of their comfort zone to discover new areas of conversation. But there's some there's some value to, you know, moving in small ways. You know, parent with children will have different kinds of conversations than they have between adults. They simplify the language, they simplify, for example, the length of the instructions that they give. And so there's a version of curriculum learning that kicks in and facilitates that learning process.
Right. Maybe we can take a question from the audience, if anybody's burning in with something related to this. We'll take that one, as you're an organizer.
The challenge contribute to advance the state of the art?
Okay, so I'll repeat the question. So the question is, how does this competition contribute to research in general, or to the advancing state of the art in dialogue systems?
You can answer both, and you can also enlarge the scope to other competitions if you want.
Right, so anybody want to give an answer?
And that's a pressure for the organizer.
Is it?
I can tell you what I think we learned, right, from participating, observing, but the groups of students who participated. I feel that having the challenge really confronts us with how to balance the research objectives versus the engineering objectives. And so, you know, we've been working on the more theoretical level for a number of years, and now participating in the challenge forced us to kind of sit down and say, this is the things that we know work on the research side. Let's put them to the test, and let's see which are the places where we need to take engineering into account to help us close that gap in terms of performance. And it was a mix of both, and it's a good sanity check. And I expect if we do the same thing in a year and in 2 years, that balance between how much the print, I say that this time, but how much the principled models versus the more engineering part, what part of the problem they can accommodate. So from my point of view, that was quite revealing.
Right. There's a big gap between our applied models that are published in research conferences and the models that actually act with the users. So
there's two things that I thought were interesting in this competition and in some of the other competitions. One, it turns out that system architectures have converged on this notion of multiple skills or multiple capabilities that are brought together and generate answers, and then you pick one of them. That wasn't necessarily obvious. You can think of having, I would imagine, if you come from an AI background, the whole thing would be a single computing engine that generates all these things. The fact that these other solutions work, I think, is very interesting. And you might almost want to think that that's how humans work, but I won't go there. The other thing that all of these systems have brought up is the crucial importance of dealing with context and maintaining coherence in conversations. So it's not just giving the right answer to whatever it is the human said, it's really somehow managing the entire history. And particularly for the kinds of approaches that we're seeing, that is a really, really big challenge. I think that's...
We're very far from handling that.
And just highlighting that problem, I think, is very important. And there's other stuff, but I think those are actually pretty key.
Yeah, I would just add to that. We saw very similar problems in the Alexa competition. First of all, there was a big gap between what we thought was the state of the art in research and what worked in practice. And one of the particular problems were incorporating the context. It's very hard for these systems, as you saw from even the winners when they're demonstrating their systems, you know, they forget what's happening. This is definitely one of the major issues, but maybe there are other issues.
I didn't participate in the challenge. I worked mostly on goal-directed dialogues. I'm not saying that chit-chat or in general conversations are not important. They are actually very important for engaging the users. But one of the things that I noticed was that some of the conversations that we have seen, we don't really see such human-human conversations. Like a human would immediately recognize that they are doing something wrong and then just change the shape of the conversation instead of keep repeating on it. I think it's good to see this type of example because it kind of feels like maybe just looking at human-human conversations and trying to learn from it is not.
Yeah, correcting yourself in a conversation. There has been tons of research on that, and I haven't seen any teams use that in their bots.
Yeah, I also want to point out, right, competition, I think, is always good in the research community. Think about, for example, machine translation, right? There have been a lot of machine translation papers until this organized this competition. And all the top research team really build a real machine translation system that can feature the finally the system goes to product. And this is a necessary step to gap the research community and the industry. If we read the dialogue papers, most people focus on just one point. But until you build an end-to-end system, you don't have the idea how to piece together stuff to build a real system. The system actually I saw today, I think it's very similar to the production systems of Microsoft is building. I don't know about Google, but it's very similar to Microsoft system. It doesn't matter it's a chat system, it's a Go-oriented system. You have all these pieces because eventually you're going to face the real users and who can ask agencies. We have different intents. So you need to handle all of this. I always say that real system is dirty, but it's useful. The research papers are like working in the classroom clean environment. It's good to incubate the novel research ideas, but that's still very far from the reality.
Right. So you've all pointed out like positive ways in which competitions help us bridge the gap between research and production. Understand what problems we're tackling, but I think there are also downsides to competitions, and one of that downsides, and I'll let you think a bit about it, is when we do research, maybe half of the problem is figuring out what question to ask. What problem am I solving? What am I trying to prove? Like, you follow the scientific methodology, you start with a hypothesis, and the moment you enter a competition, your hypothesis is given. So maybe when you ask students to participate in all these competitions, they're losing out on the learning part. They're not learning to do proper science. They're just learning to build systems that solve particular tasks. In a sense, they're being trained as engineers to work for companies.
Yeah, I agree. You need a trade-off. When we do competition, all you hear is the engineer need all this, so there's more tricks with computer system, right? But these tricks cannot last long. The 5 years after 5 years, all this is saturated. Then you need a really breakthrough. For example, recently, the deep learning, I will use deep learning as an example, right? Speech in the speech community.
But I think the problem you're highlighting is overfitting the competition. You come up with some trick that works in that, but I'm talking about the more fundamental issue that when you make a competition, you set the question, you set the metric, you set the task, and then everybody stops thinking about whether that is the right task. They're just working endlessly on that particular task. That is what I'm bringing up.
I think you need a mix of both, right? There's some value to working on some specific task in a very driven way, and there's some value to having time to think about what's the next task to set. So you need a mix of both of these things.
So trying to find the right phrase here. It's either I got my start in speech recognition. I'm not sure that sort of communicates the right thing. But if we look at that particular community and how it was essentially managed by competition, it was very different from this. And I think there's some interesting contrasts there. But basically, the government would say, solve this problem. Like, 1,000-word, speaker-independent, connected speech recognition. We'll fund 6 of you to figure out this thing and go for it. And then 5 years later, the problem gets solved.
Manhattan Project.
And so then what? Well, now we redefine what the problem is. Okay, well, never mind 1,000 words. Can you do 20,000 words? And now everybody goes through the same cycle. And after that, it's okay, never mind red speech, let's do conversation. And everybody does that. So I think properly manage the kind of the competition framework can guide a field into into something like what we have today, which is basically speech recognition as a commodity that most of us use for other work.
How do we put these guidelines in place? How do we make sure we have the right competitions?
Well, so again, I'm not sure this is, let me just point out that those competitions were basically a particular goal was determined at a high level, and then the right funding went into it. This is very different from the kinds of competitions we seem to be having today, which is people just, you know, quote unquote, come together and magically create systems. That's sort of nice because basically anybody can play, but it's maybe not so nice because no one individual group, unless they're particularly clever, can manage the amount of resource, the comparable amount of resource that went into some of these earlier efforts. So I always wonder, like, what's the balance? I mean, having 20 teams compete and come up with a real bunch of interesting ideas, or having this year 4 teams and next year 2 teams competing to come up with the solution. But having enough resources to do whatever they do. I really don't know what the balance is, but it's, I keep thinking about it.
Yeah, I want to point out it's critical to have a very healthy and diverse community, right? For example, here we have people from universities, from companies, from university and company. In this way, you get sort of requirements from different sources. From company, we are feeding real users every week. Know what makes sense, what makes a business model useful. And from research community, there's a long history. So I think we need a mixture of all of this, and then just innovate new ideas to define tasks. In some sense, define tasks is more important than just solving the tasks. So I think that's a good starting point, and for next year, we probably can ask all of you to propose new tasks and reform a community.
That exactly brings me to my next question, like how should we organize next year's competition? And you're suggesting that we should bring people together and define the task together?
Yeah, sort of. I don't know. It's a lot of work.
But, yeah. Well, so I actually think that's the right thing to do. And in fact, we're really great if Julian asked the question and 10 people put up their hands proposing ways of improving this whole thing. The model should really be evolution. It's not like we're going to do this task for the next 10 years. It's more like, okay, we did it once, what did we learn? How can we modify it, redefine it, extend it, whatever, to perhaps go into the directions that seem the most interesting or the most challenging. And I really do mean that. It's not just like people sitting up here are doing these things that should suggest.
You should be doing it.
You should come with ideas. New technology is driven by new tasks. So if you can envision any new task which can convince my thing.
And in a sense, you might be in a better position than us to think about that, because we've been stuck in these tasks thinking for years in a certain mindset, and you're coming from a different mindset.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
I would like to also hear from the participants in terms of what were the biggest challenges that they have for a problem like speech recognition. The cognition measure is so crisp that you can replicate it many times. So I see that as one of the challenges, like not having that easy of agent, but what are the other?
What are the challenges the teams?
Yes, exactly. Or how would they have improved their system much more? Like what did they need to make it much better? Some insights on that would be good.
Yeah, if the teams have anything to add, you can raise your hands and you can comment on this. Maybe Nicholas?
Yeah, so I'm part of the medial team which participated in the competition, and I think one of the biggest challenge for us was the engineering side of it. When it was time to actually push the model to the framework and make it work with multiple people talking at the same time to the same bot, coming from a research perspective, it was hard to do the jump if we don't have like a IT team behind us. So I think that
you need to lower the technical requirements to enter the competition so that it's really easy and so that researchers can just focus on research. I think,
of course, both are
important.
You
also raised your hand, Jan?
I would say that this was actually quite an open-ended competition. It wasn't a chit-chat competition, and at first I thought it's okay, but then if you try to discuss about a Wikipedia article that doesn't totally interest you, Chinese pottery of the 13th century, say, you know nothing about it, and it's not even like the beginning of the thing, so...
So the grounding of the conversation should be, humans should select it in a way that motivates them, maybe?
I don't know what's the proper one. Because ultimately you would want to learn something from the bot, but something which is like not easily Googleable. So something which is not a fact.
Yes.
So that it should be something like a search interface to something like...
That's why I mentioned probably recommendations to algorithmics process. But the reason we're working on just restaurant recommendation.
Restaurant recommendation, yes.
We have a chat on the bot. I know all the restaurants, I know the quality of this restaurant, the setting of this restaurant, and during our conversation I will give you good suggestions.
But as soon as you narrow in on a domain, so that was our thinking when we set up this competition, as soon as you narrow in on a domain like restaurant booking, you just expose yourself to people overfitting that. Let's write a rule. There's only 100 types of restaurants. Let's just fit them all and label them. And then, you know, we'll do really well. But we forget, you know, to build systems that generalize to our tasks. And that's the motivation for why we wanted to have the open-ended dialogues. So to give you a little bit of background about that. Are there any comments or feedback, questions from the audience? There is one in the back here.
Hi, Marcus, one of the competition chairs. If I look at the competitions we had, one which I really, really liked as an idea was an adversarial setup for image classification. And I wonder whether a similar thing is feasible for dialogue. Essentially have bots fool each other into thinking that they are human.
So Mikhail Bushev has this deep hack competition where they made a data set exactly for this.
Okay.
And so you have a critic that's trying to check if you're answering like a bot, if I understand correctly. So this could be an interesting competition to bring up next year.
It removes the need for human in the loop labelers,
right? But yes, we still need human to train our systems, to train our discriminators.
Yeah.
So maybe we have some comments from the panel on this, and then we can wrap up.
I don't know exactly how the other one was set up, but I would think you still need humans in the loop to do the evaluation. Because in dialogue, we have this real difficulty in defining a good objective criteria to do automatic evaluation. And the ones we have are really very poor substitute for measuring the quality of conversation. So without human in the loop, you may be optimizing just the wrong criteria.
And maybe they don't talk English anymore.
Yeah. Or as we see, they have conversations that are very short.
Yeah.
No content, just a few generic words.
Do you have something to add, Alex?
I just want to make a quick rejoinder to what a pain it is to deal with the infrastructure. But really, it's more of a building complete systems and letting interesting questions emerge from the fact that you have to push all this stuff together and work. So for example, you might have this really, really cool response generation module. And wow, is it good? But it takes 30 minutes to come up with a response. Well, okay, you know, maybe there's a paper in there, but it's not really responsive to what you're aiming for. So there's great value in being forced to make the stuff work together. It's little things like dealing with errors. So if you're doing speech recognition, well, all you need to do is to get that word error rate down and down and down, and everybody really likes it. But if you're building dialogue systems, then when an error occurs, then it's a major problem because the whole interaction gets derailed. So now you have to, you know, invest time or build something that deals with error recovery. And that's an example of a problem that comes up. that you didn't think was all that important, but actually it's just really, really important. And so I'm a big believer in having to, you know, build something complicated, which is a pain, but then you learn that much more from it.
Any last comments from the panelists? If not, I suggest we thank the panelists.